All right. You're listening to Green Left Radio. We have our first guest on the program, but I was going to allow the opportunity for our other presenter, Chloe, to introduce her.
Thanks, Jacob. So we've got an interview with Zoe Davison. Zoe is a casual pool worker, and at the start of Sydney's lockdown, Zoe was stood down at the Annette Kellerman Aquatic Centre, and she is now part of a campaign to reinstate those workers, including her own job, and she's fighting for pandemic pay for casual workers and those on Centrelink. Welcome to the show, Zoe.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. It's been really interesting working on this campaign and getting to see and hear so many people's stories.
Yeah, I bet. Well, first of all, Zoe, we're really sorry to hear that you lost your job, but, you know, you are currently fighting to get your job back at the Annette Kellerman Aquatic Centre in Marrickville in Sydney. And, you know, we know you've been empowering your co-workers to join that campaign and fight to get their jobs back and calling for more income support. So I guess just would you be able to just tell us a bit more about this campaign?
Yeah, definitely. And thank you, although unfortunately I'm really not in a very unique situation at all. You know, a lot of people are in my situation at the moment, and that's why, you know, when this campaign first started, that was a little bit of the fallback we got, the pushback we got was that, you know, this was industry standard, and that was what management said to us a lot, was industry standard, it's across the board standard, and unfortunately it has been, but we think that's not good enough. And from the start of this lockdown, we started the campaign with a small in-person protest outside of the Aquatic Centre before restrictions were tightened. And then obviously since then, it's been a lot harder, more really impossible to do anything in person. So we've since moved to have numerous online events, including a really successful day of community action where we actually received over 100 pictures of people holding messages of support, which really does show kind of how important these centres are to the community and how many people really do care about the people and the staff there. At the start of our campaign, our demands were pretty narrow. They were exactly that we should all just be paid pandemic leave, everyone that had been stood down. And then obviously since things have changed, our demands have changed a little bit to become a little bit more specific, including, you know, really trying to get the people that were falling through the cracks of the disaster payment paid by management, and also trying to instate test and isolate payments and things like that for future when we're back at work.
Thanks. Sorry for that. Sounds like a really inspiring campaign. Yeah, I guess we should all be, you know, really worried that, you know, workers like you were just discarded by a company that clearly has funds to pay and keep their workers during this pandemic. And I'm referring to Belgravia Leisure, I think that's how you pronounce it. So they're the ones that are responsible for standing down an entire workforce, and, you know, they're worth billions of dollars, and yet they're claiming they can't afford to pay their workers. You know, their CEO is one of the richest 200 people in Australia. You did sort of, you know, answer it a bit, but, you know, how have management responded to this ongoing campaign? I know you had a car cavalcade that was reported in Green Left, and, you know, I know that one of the protesters got fined a substantial amount. What do management have to say about what's going on with the campaign?
Yeah, so management have been quite resistant from the start. From the start of our campaign, we've received emails from management basically saying that it's not their problem, and that, like I said earlier, that they've basically pointed to the fact that, you know, other industries are having to go through it. They also pointed to 2020. They said that it was proof that the burden of supporting employees has to be on the government and not on individual employers. But what we said to that was the proof of 2020 was really that, you know, it was people like us that were missing out. It was employees. It's not these big companies who benefited from JobKeeper and then got to keep all the profit from it. It's actually people, the workers that had to pay the brunt of it while billionaires got richer. So, you know, we definitely didn't agree with that. They also said they couldn't afford it. And like you said, you know, we also really thought that that was not the most true, considering that that, like you said, their CEO is a multimillionaire and one of the richest people in Australia. So that, you know, and even actually our centre particularly was quite bad because other centres were offering a little bit of support for workers in that they were opening up for admin sort of jobs during the lockdown, right. But our work wouldn't even do that, unfortunately. So that was something else that we were kind of arguing for. The other time that managed police were involved in the campaign was in that first protest, which was completely COVID safe, less than 10 people, spaced out, and this is when you were allowed to have 10 people outside, and management were, although we can't be sure, we're pretty certain that management called police on that to break that up. And then the next day we received an email stating that, you know, while they agreed with our right to have a voice, they didn't agree that we were sending the right message, which was interesting.
Oh, that's just, yeah, the police using the, you know, the health orders to punish protesters. And, I was also reading that management actually thought it was appropriate to offer sacked workers, you know, boot camps as a form of restitution. It's really insulting, you know. I mean, what makes them think that you'd be motivated to go to boot camp when you know, people can't afford food? I'm glad you didn't accept that offer.
The other thing that they offered to us at that same time was a corporate solutions-based counselling service, which was very non-clinical looking, very corporate looking. They also met with staff early on, kind of very early on in the campaign, but were unwilling to really negotiate at all, and since then haven't really even been willing to meet with us. So it has been pretty staunch and radio silence on their end for most of their campaign, besides from some pretty, you know, insulting emails.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's pretty awful. I mean, companies like Belgravia, Leisure, they're profiting from something that is, you know, has been built by the community without giving anything back. Yeah, and it's just, I mean, it's just creating misery. Yeah, and it is terrible that under COVID-19, casual workers are just considered expendable. But like you said, they're saying it's an industry standard. And, you know, millions of people have been stood down during this Delta variant of COVID and, you know, the eventual lockdowns affecting essential workplaces. People aren't eligible for government support. They're entitled to annual leave, and it just leaves so many people, without income for the duration of a lockdown. So, you know, if you're locked down for 2 weeks, that's 2 weeks of lost wages for someone who lives paycheck to paycheck. That can be really devastating. It can drive people into serious financial hardship and poverty. But I guess I was wanting to know you did touch on it before, but, you know, what do you think of the federal government's support of workers who have been stood down as a result of COVID-19?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, you know, a lot of people have been living paycheck to paycheck and then automatically, like, all of a sudden have to last a month without any extra support from the government. And, you know, I was one of those people. I am on youth allowance, so I wasn't eligible for any of the disaster payments, which meaning after rent I was on $10 a day. And without the support of, you know, a partner and family, I wouldn't have been able to pay rent. I wouldn't have been able to afford food. And, you know, not everyone is lucky enough to have a support network. And even the ones that are, it shouldn't be on the burden of our family and friends on their generosity to support us. You know, my family aren't well off. They're just very generous. And they're in a lot of the same situation that I am. They've been stood down as well. They have to support kids and pay a mortgage on as little as $600 a week. That's ridiculous. You can't expect anyone to do that. Yeah, and it's, you know, not only that, you know, the financial stuff, I've spoken to a lot of people in my situation that haven't been able to receive the disaster payments because they were on income support. That's been really the issue I've been really involved with because it's so personal to me. And, you know, I have friends that have gone into over $1,000 of debt in this last month, might not be able to get the disaster payment because they can't prove that they've lost 8 hours of work. Because, you know, because a lot of the thing is as well with the government is that they've purposefully targeted the most vulnerable in the community. Mm. You know, it's not that we've fallen through the cracks like a lot of the media has kind of been playing it as. It's that we were purposefully written into the legislation as ineligible. You know, as part of the eligibility requirement, no one on income support can receive it, which left people, you know, it just doesn't even make any logical sense. Like, youth allowance is less than job seeker. I have to supplement it with casual work since I've lost that, you know. And then as well, to then bring in the disaster payment for top up for people on income support, while a small win and, you know, while it's better than nothing, is just a bit of a slap in the face and a bit ridiculous, because it's still less than overall what you would get on the other disaster payment. And I just think it's really quite horrible to split people in tiers of worthiness. And the other thing is that, like I mentioned before, you have to be able to prove you've lost 8 hours of work. And a lot of people that are on JobSeeker and underemployed or youth allowance, you know, having cash in hand jobs or have jobs that are really, you know, maybe not the most official, and they have to be able to get by, and they still deserve support, you know. So, yeah, I just think it's been absolutely ridiculous. The other thing that I think is really, really horrible with this disaster support top up with the income for the income people on income support is that, you know, we've been left for a month without any extra support. I like I said, I know people who've gone into debt. So then to bring in this payment and not talk about any compensation for the last month is, you know, not very fair. I had to do the, I applied for it, and you even have to put into the application, you know, how it's affected you. For example, you're in a COVID hotspot, and then they ask you for how long it's been affecting you, and the only option you're allowed to give is from the start of this week. But, you know, it's been affecting everyone for a lot longer than that. So I just think it is, the government have been horrendous with their support. They've been really obvious with their over-policing of poorer communities, but this is an attack on, like, the working class.
It definitely is. I mean, disaster payments are not actually reaching people who are actually facing a disaster. I think it did increase that payment to $750 or something, or maybe it's ended, but it certainly doesn't make up for, you know, 1.2 million students, pensioners, people with disability and their carers, and also the unemployed, like you said, people who are already on, you know, youth allowance or, you know, Centrelink. They all went without that support for 4 weeks, and you were one of those people, you know, who went without that for 4 weeks. It's just impossible to make it up. Actually, I have just maybe a couple of questions. How are you doing for time?
Oh, all good. Yep.
I guess I wanted to ask about the community. You did mention that there is, you know, quite a bit of community support. And the Annette Kellerman Aquatic Centre is partially owned or funded by the Inner West City Council. I guess maybe just give us a bit of a brief just idea of how the broader community has been supportive to you and the other workers during this campaign.
Yeah, of course. So just to explain the Annette Kellerman Aquatic Centre a little bit, is that, yeah, it's owned by the council and was built by the council, but they've outsourced the management, which is actually really common for aquatic centres and gyms and the like. In fact, a lot of Sydney's pools are owned by Belgravia Leisure, which is why they're such a, well, not owned, run by Belgravia Leisure, because that's why they're such a wealthy company. We are lucky enough that at our centre, we are going back to being run by the Inner West in 2022, so next year, which I think is why we've received kind of a little bit of a disinterest from management, because they're just not engaged in doing anything since they're kind of out of there next year anyway. But that's not the case in all of Belgravia centres. Unfortunately, they're still running a lot of community-owned pools. And like I mentioned earlier, the centre is a community hub, you know, working there and then walking around the streets of Marrickville, I see so many people, you know, I'm recognised everywhere I go, because it really is one of the hearts of the suburb, and people have really shown that they care about who works there and, you know, how they're being treated. Like I said, we received over 100 photos of community support at the start of lockdown. That was really, really helpful. I know that management have received a few emails on our behalf of members that have been aware of their campaign. We've had teachers, we've had parents pull their students out of swim school classes in support of the swim school teachers. So, you know, we have really seen a big rally around, and it is unfortunate that these other pools aren't going back to the community. So I think that is something that we should focus on and really push community spaces to become going back to the local council.
Thanks, Zoe. I guess we'll start to wrap up soon. Yeah, thanks. I mean, you've been such an excellent leader in the fight for workers' rights. And, you know, we really hope you win. You know, maybe for anyone listening out there, you know, people have lost their jobs or, you know, maybe people can help out with this campaign. Did you have any, you know, any other comments that you'd like to say, or if any other presenters wanted to ask a question, now's a chance. Or, Zoe, really if you had any, like, last comments, maybe.
Yeah, really just as well that, you know, it really is unfair that the individuals have been made to feel so guilty about it. And I think especially in a time where lockdown, you know, really does affect people's mental health, and financial stress is a huge, huge burden on mental health. And especially when we've got, you know, people in the government like Gladys, you know, saying, putting blame on individuals for not following restrictions, when really it's the government's fault for not rolling out the vaccine correctly and not providing test and isolate payments and significant support for people to not go to work and spread the COVID further. So, you know, I would just say to people that, you know, losing work, that it's not your fault and yeah. that, you know, it is the government that really bear this responsibility.
Yeah, well said. It seems like the only way that ordinary workers are going to survive this pandemic, by the way governments are treating people around the world, is just their solution is just be rich. You should be rich
exactly.
to get through. It's ridiculous.
Unfortunately, not everyone has that opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much for joining us on the show this morning, Zoe. Solidarity to you and all the pool workers at Annette Kellerman Aquatic Centre. We'll be keeping an eye on the campaign, and listeners, you can check out Green Left for coverage of this ongoing campaign.
Okay, thanks, comrade. Have a lovely day.
Have a lovely day. Have a good weekend.